from Directions Media. This is Directions on the News for Tuesday, July 15th, 2008. Each week, this podcast explores topics and trends of interest to the geospatial community. This is Adina Schutzberg in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica in Huntsville, Alabama.
This week, we explore the idea of individuals, sometimes along with their electronic gadgets, acting as geographic sensors. We dug up some interesting examples to share and explore how this type of data collection might play out in the future. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by ESRI. ArcGIS 9.3 is now available and offers a complete suite of software that improves your entire GIS workflow.
Now, I want to start off with some examples of data collection from individuals where they are basically going about their daily lives and doing what they do, and in fact are becoming a valuable resource for geospatial information. And I love this because it is the ultimate expression of the principle of least effort. You just go out and you do stuff, and you're creating valuable information for researchers. Let me talk about two examples that I found in the last couple of weeks, and this really blows my mind. Now, the first example is called HealthMap, and it's basically a website, and this actually comes out of Children's Hospital here in Boston with a number of funders, including the National Library of Medicine, the National Institutes of Health, Canadian Institutes of Health Research, and Google.org. And the idea is to use the web as a resource for new information about disease. And instead of just looking at the regular resources that you might look at, like newspapers and whatnot, this goes a lot deeper and looks at blogs and listservs and chat rooms and other kinds of resources that are not the usual suspects. Per John Brownstein, PhD, who's the co-founder of HealthMap and an assistant professor in the informatics program at Children's Hospital, he describes it, and this is a great explanation. It's a disease mining system that uses the internet to look for outbreaks going on around the world, bringing all this information together in one view. And, of course, that view is a map. So this is just such a clever way to take advantage of, again, people doing what they do. They're on blogs. They're talking about things that are of interest to them that, in this case, happen to be medical.
I think the health map is a really interesting example. There are so many applications that you can determine and derive from looking at this. If you're a researcher, you want to see where the latest outbreaks are. If you're a tourist and you want to be aware of certain outbreaks or where there is a concentration of disease or where you may want to avoid, I mean, this is a really impressive resource for just the average individual who just wants an idea of what's there, what do I need to know about, where do I need to go. If you delve down into the individual areas where they pinpoint certain diseases, they'll give you the reference. So you hover over a point location, and it bring up a link, the source of the information, and it's tremendous. I mean, you get so much out of it.
Right, and one of the things that I think is really significant about this effort is, unlike other tools that try to have people sort of vote on the importance of news, so things like Dig, this seems to be sort of an even playing field where a note on a blog versus an official article from the Washington Post sort of get the same kind of weight and are put on the map.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's a community-sourced site. And sometimes that almost instantaneous information that you can get from something like this is just as valuable as something that has to be, you know, vetted and researched and, you know, published.
Your statement about it being a community-sourced site is really important, except that the people who are contributing to this, they don't have to sign up for anything. They don't have to join a social network. They don't have to do any of those kinds of things. They just go about their daily lives that happen to take advantage of the internet as a communication tool. Second example of this sort of human-powered location information principle of least effort, I found at New Scientist. And basically what it suggests is that scientists can figure out the epicenter of an earthquake just based on people's behavior in going to the web to figure out if there was just an earthquake in their location. And the example that's given referred to visits to the European Mediterranean Seismological Center's website, which I guess you would only visit if you thought there was an earthquake. And what they found when they geocoded visits to that site was that they could pinpoint the earthquake, in one case, very accurately within 15 minutes. So not only could they figure out where the hits were coming from and sort of center in on the epicenter, they could also find those pockets where there was no activity, which probably indicated that the web was out. So again, people were just going about their daily lives. They felt the rumble of the earth. They went to their computers. They went to this website. And from that, we could detect where the earthquake was.
You know, so that brings up an interesting case where, you know, this is a particular site that's gathering that information. It kind of begs the question of whether we're going to have, you know, websites that are a collection of these sensing sources. The health map example is certainly one where it's collecting passively all this information. Here is yet another example of a passive collection device. I mean, does it beg the question that we're going to have a mega website for health information, for natural disaster information that is, as I said before, community sourced or from a variety of places? So it kind of leaves me with this question of where is the next thing going to happen? You know, what are we going to sense next, or what is the individual going to be able to provide next for which we'll want to capture that type of information?
I think that's a really valuable question, but in these two cases, individuals were not asked to do anything. They just did what they do. And I think that is a really powerful thing. If you can take advantage of people, you don't have to ask them any questions. They sense participating in this giant experiment. They were just doing what they do. And I think we need to sort of contrast these two terribly clever uses of, in a sense, human behavior with the other kind of community-sourced kinds of offerings that are coming out. And let's move to CitySense. And the idea here is that you take your GPS-enabled device and you go out and you download this app, and it sort of keeps track of where everybody is and where the hotspots are within, for starters, a city. And for now, it's a free download for BlackBerry and iPhones, and it displays what look like heat maps to show where the most human activity is going on at the moment, down to the street intersection. Future releases of the product may make those locations even more detailed, but, says CEO Greg Skibinski, that's not yet decided due to the importance of privacy. So the idea then is, you know, with your permission and with your participation, we can get a sense of where the hotspots are.
Yeah, the question I have about that one is doesn't it just default to, you know, where there's the greatest population centers in the city? I would have to know that there'd be more information that about what's going on, or you know, in the case of if I want to put in my personal information, that I wasn't just always going to get the same heat map all the time. I'd really have to have it personalized to me to say, up on the Embarcadero, Pier 39 is really, you know, where it's happening right now. I mean, it kind of begs the question of, is this where it's always going to be hot?
Right. Well, I think you're getting really at what this company eventually wants to do, which is to tune this in based on the kinds of places it knows that you prefer to go to. So if you're always ending up at the football stadium or the baseball park or whatever, it might be much more likely to tune you into the hot spots of sports than the hot spots of, say, music.
Going to its logical extreme is, you know, are they going to sell this information to the companies that are doing location-based advertising?
I think that's right on. And I think that's exactly how you'd use these maps, at least for now, is you'd go to another service like a Yelp or a Socialite to figure out, you know, why is that a hot spot right now? What's going on over there? You know, is there a free concert? Or was there a riot because of some, you know, political issue?
Or do I want to do some sort of geospatial querying of what's going on in that area? Are we to that point where we're sophisticated enough that we've got all of the events that we know of happening in that area? Are we getting a feed about the latest crime in the area? So that if you did a search on that hotspot, what would you find?
This is sort of the beginning. Let's collect the information. Let's make the heat maps. I think the next sense is, let's then try to understand what those hot spots are and how to use them. And going back to your question of how might this set of information be taken advantage of? The business plan seems to turn on primarily profiting from business clients purchasing deeper information from the platform. So they're going to collect all of this information and then, in a sense, use it for some kind of business success stories based on location and so forth.
Well, and I think even the broader issue or the broader use of that data is who's going to get that information. I could certainly see this in useful in real estate, in retailing, in target marketing, market research. I mean, all of this is viable with this type of information, and it's instantaneous and it's current. So, you know, you're getting to the point where you could even extrapolate and say, you know what, if I walk into, you know, the local food mart, eggs are going to increase in price because there's a hot spot of major demographic activity. You know what I mean? That's an extreme example.
Well, I think that's what they want to do eventually is use this for pure predictive stuff, just like they do with traffic, right? You calculate the history of traffic and you use that to help predict what's going to happen in the future. This is the same thing, just more with individuals than with vehicles. Two other examples of situations where you have to do something to participate in the collection of information, but maybe you get something back in return. The hot new GPS is the Dash Express, which, in addition to being connected to the internet, will also, should you choose to buy one and install it and participate in the network, will capture information about your speed and make traffic information available to others who are also participating in the network. Now, the challenge right now is that there just aren't that many of these devices out in the world, so the amount of information to be shared isn't huge, but the potential is certainly great. The other end of the spectrum is a free download from Mexins. That's the company behind Navizon, and that's a company that uses Wi-Fi to locate where you are in your mobile device. And what this company does is if you agree and have a GPS, you can become one of the trackers that collects information about existing or new Wi-Fi hotspots and cell towers. And so as you're traveling during the day to work or wherever you happen to be going, when you confirm the existence of a hotspot or you find a new one, you get different numbers of points. And if you collect enough points, they will eventually send you a check for I believe the minimum is $15. You have to collect some thousands of points. Both of these situations are, yeah, you have to put in a little bit of investment in terms of having the hardware and some software, which is typically free, but then you give back to the community. So this isn't exactly the principle of least effort, but it's pretty close.
Well, I think what we're seeing is a couple of examples here of the next logical step in getting folks to contribute, incentivizing them to contribute to collect the information. What comes to mind, though, is are we going down the path where all of this user sense data allows people to think about what they need to do now in terms of building sensor networks? You know, do we need to dig up the roads to put in sensors to determine traffic? Do we need to put in biosensors around cities to look for disease? I mean, it does kind of beg the question that got some real potential to economize on some of the things that we really do need to know about. And maybe, you know, this, you know, pay for the information model that Mexins is doing isn't such a bad thing and that others will pick up on it.
I suspected that there was going to be more of that. And years ago, I interviewed a scientist at the Woodrow Wilson Institute, and it was the first time I had heard of the idea of, well, let's just put a little sensor on your phone, you know, your GPS-enabled phone, and it'll sniff the air quality as you travel around. And I remember just being bowled over by that concept. And today, you could certainly incentivize people to do that. Maybe they would, if they contributed to the information, they would also get back maps of the local air quality data or whatever. But I think that's going to explode. And I think it's really interesting to look at those things that we really need to incentivize people to participate in. And these other set of things where if people just go about their daily lives, we can learn so much.
I agree. I mean, you could put these little sensor devices on cars. Tell me what the pollution is in downtown Manhattan. Give me alerts on air quality. I mean, there's all sorts of applications you can think about that are both time-based and location-based that, you know, we haven't, I don't think we've even scratched the surface. You mentioned that before, but whether it's a sensor on your phone, a sensor on your car, a sensor on your person, you know.
Or you just going about your daily life.
Yep, that's it.
That's all the time we have today. Our sponsor, ESRI, would like you to know that ArcGIS 9.3 has new and improved functionality for exporting and distributing interactive maps to Adobe PDF. ArcGIS users who want to enable find, measure, and markup tools in Adobe PDF maps should download the new ArcGIS 9.3 map export patch to support Adobe Acrobat 9 PDF. For more information, visit www.esri.com/what's new. If you want to contact us about today's topic or anything else, you can send us an email to editors@directionsmag.com. You can also leave comments at the podcast entries at Directions Magazine or All Points Blog. Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.